It's become routine to hear how an overzealous prosecutor got someone sent to jail when all along the suspect was innocent. This is the story of a prosecutor who used his conscience and plain old detective work to save the life of a suspect, not convict him, and the story of how the two men's lives converged a second time. It began with the murder of a priest. The murder happened almost a century ago. The case was so spectacular that years later, Hollywood made a movie out of it. It's called Boomerang. The story begins in Bridgeport, Connecticut, February 4th, 1924. People braved the winter chill that night to enjoy dinner out or maybe take in a show. At 7:45, actress Ethel Barrymore was taking the stage downtown. Meanwhile, a real-life drama was about to play out in Bridgeport, one that would shake the city to its core. A Catholic priest was stepping out for his nightly stroll.
A man known and loved by all. You might find him almost any evening on Main Street, taking his constitutional after supper.
His name was Hubert Dahme. He was 56 years old, born in Germany. He'd been the beloved pastor at St. Joseph's Church in Bridgeport for 23 years.
Hello, Father.
Hello, my dear.
As Father Dahme walked along Main Street, a man approached him from behind. He pointed a revolver by the priest's ear, fired a single shot, and then fled.
Hey, stop that man! Stop him! Grab him! Grab him!
No one could grab him. Father Dahme died at the hospital within hours. Meanwhile, the manhunt began. Bridgeport police were under intense pressure from the public and press to find the killer. 1 week after the murder, an officer in a nearby town noticed a young man he thought was acting strangely. The man was Harold Israel from rural Pottsville, Pennsylvania. He was a wispy 20-year-old, barely over 5 feet tall. He'd been honorably discharged from the Army a few months before. Israel had been staying in a Bridgeport boarding house where he met up with some Army buddies. He didn't own much, but he did have a gun on him. It had five chambers. Four of them were loaded. One bullet had been fired. Police booked Harold Israel on gun charges. Then Bridgeport cops interrogated him about the murder of Father Dahme. They pelted him with questions for 28 hours. Israel insisted he had nothing to do with the crime. Here's how the film Boomerang portrayed it.
What are you trying to do to me?
Why do you keep lying, son? You can't get away with anything.
You're crazy.
Let's talk about the gun again.
Finally, Israel confessed. He was charged with first-degree murder. They could hang you for that. The young veteran became public enemy number one. The police investigation turned up people who witnessed the shooting and some who saw the gunman run away. Some of the witnesses identified Israel as the killer when police brought him to the station. And a ballistics engineer told police the bullet that killed the priest came from Harold Israel's revolver. The evidence was presented to the chief prosecutor for the county, Homer Cummings. He'd been mayor of Stamford, Connecticut, three times and chairman of the Democratic National Committee. Cummings was 54 years old. He was an imposing man, 6'2". He was Ivy League, educated at Yale. On May 27, 1924, more than 3 months after the priest was murdered, there was a court hearing. Prosecutor Cummings took his place before the judge. It seemed all of Bridgeport was watching. Cummings spoke for about 90 minutes, no notes. Some people had wondered if the suspect, Harold Israel, was a victim of circumstance. So Prosecutor Cummings had done his own investigation. That day in court, he methodically cited every scrap of evidence and tore it to shreds. Cummings had gone to the scene of the crime at night. He determined that people who saw the killer could not have identified him running away. The light was too dim. Cummings had hired six ballistics experts. They told him the bullet that killed Father Dahme could not have come from the gun found on the accused Harold Israel. The marks on the bullet weren't right. And what about the fact that Israel confessed to the crime? Doctors blamed it on Israel's exhaustion. In fact, once Israel did get rest, he again insisted he was innocent. And that's what Prosecutor Cummings concluded. Harold Israel was not the killer. Charges dropped, case closed. The prosecutor had defended the suspect. Homer Cummings was celebrated for resisting the pressure to convict. Future Supreme Court Justice Felix Frankfurter told Cummings that the case would live in the annals as a standard by which prosecutors would be judged. Harold Israel wasn't in court the day his life was spared. When he was told he'd be set free, he said, "That's good. It came out right." No one else was arrested. And that's where the case that's taught in law schools ends. It's also where the movie Boomerang ends. But there's another chapter to the story. This one's personal. Harold Israel, the former suspect and Army vet, headed home to Pennsylvania to find a job. Meanwhile, prosecutor Homer Cummings' star kept rising. In 1933, President Franklin Roosevelt tapped Cummings as U.S. Attorney General. Cummings built up the FBI and fought organized crime. When he retired from the government, Cummings went back to practice law at the two firms he founded. A couple of years went by, and then the former prosecutor received a letter. It was from someone he likely thought he'd never encounter again, the man he saved from the gallows, Harold Israel.
I guess you think that I have the nerve to write to you for what you have did for me. But you see, I have to write to someone. I'm out of work about 3 years, and it looks like I can't get any work down here because everywhere I go, they say no. So I don't know what to do.
He signed it.
Your friend, Harold Israel.
Homer Cummings wrote back within a week. He was kind, but said he wasn't sure how he could help. Then 5 more years passed, and Hollywood came calling. It was 1946. Homer Cummings asked FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover to find out how Harold Israel was faring, and Hoover reported back. Israel, the one-time murder suspect, had become a family man, a hard worker and a trustee in his church in the village of Gilberton, Pennsylvania. Cummings welcomed the news. The former prosecutor negotiated with the producers to pay Israel $18,000 for the rights to his story. That would be about $250,000 today. A nice take for a coal worker raising a family in a small town. Gilberton was a company town, a coal company that owned most of the land in the village. Harold Israel worked at the coal yard 7 days a week for a sum of $60. He lived in a simple duplex on an unpaved road. Some of Israel's descendants still live nearby. We went to Gilberton to meet them at the home of Israel's granddaughter, Darlene Friel.
Hi, I'm Lisa. How are you?
Good, how are you?
Okay.
We brought something we knew the Israel descendants would want to see. Transcripts of letters we learned about while researching the story. The letters had gone back and forth from the Israel family in Pennsylvania to the grand East Coast home of Attorney Cummings. The Israel grandkids knew the letters existed, but they'd never read them. The first letter was written by their grandmother, Olive, that's Harold Israel's wife. She had written to the former prosecutor, Homer Cummings, to thank him for securing the money from the film. Lisa, do you want to read this?
We can't begin to thank you enough for what you have done for us.
Lisa Berrier is one of the Israel grandchildren.
I keep asking my husband, are you sure it is true? He just laughs at me and says, sure it is. To him, Homer Cummings, you are next to God. He worships you.
Berrier and the rest of the Israel family have always known about their grandfather Harold's brush with the law, but not from him. Here's Israel's granddaughter, Darlene Friel.
It was always Graham.
Yeah.
He never talked about that. I think that was one part of his life that he didn't want to dwell on or think of.
As the years went by, there were many more letters between Olive Israel and Homer Cummings, 10 years worth. Olive, or Graham, often asked the former prosecutor for advice. In one letter, she wondered if she and Harold were spending their movie payout too lavishly. They'd bought a used Chevy, planned to put a bathroom inside the house, and each get a new set of teeth. Homer Cummings wrote her back.
I note the description of the expenditures you're making, and it seems to me that they are entirely justified.
The correspondence continued.
We've built an extra room on our home. The boys love to read funny books and play records, so this room will be used real hard.
The former prosecutor, Homer Cummings, had a small family. He'd married 4 times, he became a widower 2 times, and divorced 2 times. He had just 1 grandson, but the dynamics of divorce kept the Cummings family members distant. Meanwhile, Cummings' relationship with the Israels grew warmer. He sent gifts to the Israel home in Pennsylvania. Pearls and perfumes for Olive, a set of lamps for the house, baby clothes his wife knit for the Israel grandchildren.
You're getting together quite a family, and I hope that happiness and content follow you all the days of your life.
That family is grateful to Homer Cummings to this day for his kindness and for his courage in the courtroom when he eviscerated the prosecution's own evidence and exonerated their grandfather. Homer Cummings wrote his last letter to the Israels in 1956, 32 years after he and Harold met following the murder. 2 months later, Cummings died at the age of 86. There's a list of dozens of people who sent flowers to the Cummings funeral. Among them, a Supreme Court justice, a college president, an ambassador, and Mr. and Mrs. Harold Israel, Gilberton, Pennsylvania. A final thank you from the one-time murder defendant to the prosecutor who saved his life. Harold Israel died 8 years later of black lung disease, the scourge of the coal worker. He was 60 years old. The man who murdered Father Dahme was never caught. Today, Connecticut authorities say that's a tragedy, but not as great a tragedy as convicting the wrong man. This story was produced by Lynn Joliker in partnership with reporter Ken Armstrong and the Marshall Project, a nonprofit news organization that reports on criminal justice. For a link to the Marshall Project story on the case, go to our website, hereandnow.org. You can also link to the story in the current issue of Smithsonian Magazine.